What's up, Open Floor Globe? This is Ben Golver with the Washington Post. I am joined on the other line by Michael the Pod Pina of Sports Illustrated. Michael, over the weekend, we had one of the best nationally televised games of the year between your Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors. And I say that despite the fact that Jason Tatum went absolutely nuts. I'm sure he brought a huge smile to your face, overcoming a sensational performance by Steph Curry as well, who has just been red hot here in April. And that's where I want to start, because Steph Curry is averaging almost 40 points per game in April. He's shooting almost 50% on threes in April. He's got four 40-point games in his last seven appearances, including a season-high 53 points against the Denver Nuggets. It has been Steph Curry on a different level. And Brandon in Los Angeles, who's a big Steph Curry defender, wants to take a moment, Michael, to take a little victory lap and to maybe push back on some things that you've said recently. Are you okay with that?
Let's go.
Oh, you're saying bring it on, wartime. Here we go. Brandon says, do you guys both remember just 2 weeks ago when the basketball world had declared the Golden State Warriors dead? Not only that, but the whole Steph Curry thing was coming to an end because everyone was saying that Curry might not be able to get the Warriors into the play-in. That was the consensus, and it was agreed that the Warriors' window was officially closed and that a healthy Klay Thompson didn't put the Warriors back into contender status. Now what? Luckily, when everyone was throwing dirt on Golden State Warriors graves and asking if Curry was at the end of his prime, Curry got healthy and has been on a historic tear. So where would you rank Curry right now as far as best players on the planet? And he's taking issue not only with you, Michael, but, quote, 95% of the media, ex-players, fans, and insiders who he believes were too quick to pounce on Golden State's struggles. What say you, Michael, on behalf of all those people?
Well, I think I've been a pretty staunch Steph supporter over the years, especially since he was the first unanimous MVP in NBA history. And, like, look, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I expected him to go on this type of tear and just completely shred defenses in a way that even he never has before. But it's not totally surprising. Like, I'm
always
not shocked.
Looming as a possibility, isn't it?
It always is, of course. That's why I picked the Warriors as part of the reason why I picked the Warriors as my league pass team before my number one league pass team before the season began. Like, I wanted to see what Steph would look like in a situation where the Warriors needed him to be a type A option, and he has been. It's been incredible. That game on Saturday night was the most entertaining basketball game I've seen in a year. And yeah, the fact that they lost kind of supports the argument that like, people could be maybe doubting the Golden State Warriors more so than Steph Curry the individual. But, like, he's just been out of this world, man. Just been absolutely incredible.
Well, I think that result, it does kind of confirm something that you were making the case for earlier this season, which is, hey, if you have A++ Steph Curry, I mean, his numbers right now are basically identical to his unanimous MVP season. You have Steve Kerr absolutely raving about Curry, both physically and mentally, in terms of where he's at this stage in his career. We haven't really seen a better version of Steph than this, you know, in terms of what he's been doing the last month or so. If that version isn't enough to sort of, you know, put you on a 70-win pace or, you know, a 67-win pace, what happens when he's not playing quite that well or he's not having that same level of success? Because, of course, there's going to be streaks, you know, fits and starts when a lot of your game is relying upon three-point shooting. I mean, look, even Steph Curry himself is not going to average 10 threes for an entire season. That's just not how it works, right? And I think your point at the start of the season was, well, even if Steph's an A+, what else do they necessarily have around him, and where is this going? And so, you know, put the loss to Boston aside, because I think they've won four of their last five. They've made some, you know, ground up in the Western Conference standings. They're probably, almost certainly, I would say, going to land in that play-in mix. Has this recent push, and it's come without James Wiseman, of course, their rookie who was really struggling as a fit next to Curry and looked kind of lost on offense and defense. Has this recent push changed your perception of Curry, though, compared to his peers? Where would you rank him as one of the best players on the planet, to answer Brandon's question? And has that changed at all since the start of the year? Because for me, it really hasn't. I think I had Curry fifth on my top 100, and I would still have him kind of in that same mix. I mean, ultimately, like, you know, if Golden State was the four seed, we would be talking about Curry as an MVP candidate. It, you know, he would be right there in the mix for all the kinds of typical discussions that he has been in the past. But I do think the lack of talent around him and the impact of, you know, Wiseman in developing him has maybe overshadowed Curry's individual ability a little bit. So I think Brandon's onto something there. But I'm not completely convinced that this has, you know, this last month has changed the Steph Curry story forever, as Brandon seems to want to indicate.
No, I mean, I think that if you're like you or I and you were Steph believers, I mean, that term is so stupid anyway, because, I mean, he had absolutely nothing more to prove coming into this season. But if you were a Steph believer, like, I don't know how much this has altered what you said, your perception of what Steph is able to do, his impact on the game, just how unstoppable he can be on a night-to-night basis. And so if I'm, you know, I think, like, injuries this season have for sure tampered with the ability to rank players. It's made it very difficult. Like, I think about how before the season began, you and I were kind of ranking players by, we would stack two guys beside one another. And I think we had Steph go up against Anthony Davis in one debate, which is totally reasonable. And we can't really do that right now because Anthony Davis has had a really down year, partly due to injury. But if I'm just looking at what Steph has done over the last 15 games-ish, the last month extended, how could I possibly say any other player alive is better than him? Like, what's the argument for anybody else? It doesn't exist.
Right. So he's number one in April for you. There's no question about that. He is for me as well. And I think that's always been his ceiling. And this is a little bit of a elastic conversation when you're saying who are the best players in the world, especially with guys coming in and out. His ceiling has been, you know, number one. But I think when you're looking at the total body of work, when you're flirting around 500, kind of regardless of who your teammates are, it's hard to say, you know, at that stage that you're absolutely number one for the entire season. And I think when I'm looking ahead to conversations like the MVP vote, I want to see more progress in the standings from Golden State before I put Steph into that conversation. Now, you know, Damian Lillard, I would say he's dealt with an awful lot of adversity in Portland. He's been so huge for them in late game situations, delivering clutch win after clutch win after clutch win. I think as of right now, I would have Lillard over Curry on my MVP ballot, right? That could certainly change if Curry continues to average 40 points and, you know, gets Golden State up into like the seventh seed here over the next 3 weeks before the playoffs, right? So I think this is a little bit unresolved, but I do think Curry's in generally the right place. And that brings me to my next question, which is, you know, potentially Dame versus Curry versus Harden versus whoever in the All-NBA guard competition. Now, the last time we brought this up, Michael, you and I, well, really just I was screaming at you for even mentioning Zach LaVine as a possible All-NBA selection. But how do we pick between these guards this year, Michael? And who are you circling for All-NBA first team? Does Curry make it? Because in a vacuum, he's, you know, just a cut above a player like Lillard. Do you reward Lillard for his team's success and his impact on that team's success? Do you just discount Harden because you're still mad at him for the Houston exit? I mean, how are you kind of picking between these guys or whichever other candidates you're weighing?
Yeah, I mean, this was a really tough exercise to kind of go through. Before we begin, Luka is a guard. That's what we are settling on forever, right?
I'm calling him a guard, yes.
Okay, even though he'll play in lineups with Brunson and THJ and whatever. It's not a big deal. It's tough with Luka in the conversation.
Michael, I think Ernst & Young handles the NBA's like official balloting procedure, you know, to keep it all on the up and up. I think they're the accounting firm that handles that. I don't work for Ernst & Young. So, like, you're going to have to take that question, that whole line of questioning, a completely different direction and, you know, maybe ask somebody who cares. I'm calling Luka a guard.
Okay, so Luka is then first team, right?
Whoa, like really?
You think that is controversial?
I think it's up for debate.
Okay. I watch a lot of the Mavericks. I watch a lot of Mavericks games. I I don't think it's up for debate or up for controversy. Like, he's, I don't know, he's like nearing perfection on offense now that he's got the 3-point shot down pretty good. And I think he leads the league in assist rate, or he's up there in assist rate. He's just absolutely a total monster. I don't know how you defend him.
Well, on this subject, just real quick, one sentence answer. Who had the better shot? Luka's push shot game winning 3-pointer or Steph Curry's left-handed double clutch 3-pointer against Boston?
Curry, no doubt about it.
Really?
Even close. Oh, I mean, like, if I'm playing horse, which shot do I think I can hit with my life on the line? It's Luka's. I have literally no chance. I am a dead person if I am trying what Steph did over Grant Williams. Yeah, that was incredible.
That shot was so tough by Steph, he probably only makes it 7 out of 10 times in an empty gym. Anyway, back to your arguments in favor of Luka.
Okay, so I like Luka. He's first team for me.
Let me ask you, if Golden State could catch Dallas in the standings, unlikely, I think they're 2.5 games back right now, would that flip your decision? Or are you going to have Luka and Steph as your first team?
So I don't really factor team performance that much. Like, if you are on a team that is 6-73 or something, then we have a problem, and I don't think no matter what your statistics are, I don't think you're going to make all NBA. But it's less of a factor here for me, which kind of goes in line with how I pick all-star teams too. But
yeah, that explains a lot. You just don't care about the team results. So does that mean Harden's not getting any bonus points from you for leading the Brooklyn Nets to the top of the standings like he did for, you know, a solid 2.5 months there?
He was nearing his way back into the conversation, and then I don't know if you watched their game against the Miami Heat yesterday, but he had on a sweater that was very festive in a way that almost offended me. I did not like his attire, so he got bumped back down.
Oh, Michael, come on.
Out of the conversation for that jacket, yeah.
This is the GQ roots in you showing through. just to say, I would have Harden first team as actually my first guard selection because I do value winning an awful lot. And consistency factor. I know he's not the flavor of the month right now. Frankly, not really the flavor of the year either. You know, I'm not sure people are really rallying around him, but I will personally and say he's my first All-NBA first-team guard selection.
So I Basketball Reference lets you take all these different players and match their statistics up against each other. And so I filtered in Steph, Luka, Dame, and Harden, and then also I you're gonna get upset, but I also included Brad Beal.
No, you didn't. You didn't do that. We're just gonna skip over that part. All right. So, what did Basketball Reference tell you when you did this?
Well, Harden, statistically, if you just look at like the total numbers, if you look at some of the advanced numbers, he just isn't quite on par with Steph. I mean, Steph leads all those candidates in PER, true shooting, win shares per 48, VORP, just all like the advanced catch-alls. Curry is just like there. And I have a stat for you that I think you'll absolutely love. The gap between Curry, who leads all players in offensive real plus minus, the gap between Curry and the runner-up, who happens to be Dame right now, is the same difference between Dame and the 36th ranked Ty Jerome. Think about that. That's one of the most astonishing statistics you'll ever hear.
No, it's pretty wild. I mean, he has been way out in front for a while on that stat. You know, the RPM guys do tend to like tinker with their formula every couple years. I do wonder if Curry broke it and like they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and be like, all right, there's something crazy going on here. So on that basis alone, are you taking Luka and Steph? Is that your final answer?
I have Steph and Luka penciled in as my first team right now, yes. And that was tough because you know I love Dame, and I think what Dame has done, I mean, maybe it's like a little bit of recency bias, and Dame has been relatively struggling recently. And man, it's tough because like you go back and you think about the season he had and carrying the Portland Trailblazers when CJ was out and when Nurkic was out, having one of the better clutch seasons in memory. He was absolutely incredible. So it stings to put Dame where I've put him, which is second team. I have him on second team with Harden. But I don't know, like Steph, what he's doing now is just something that you have to like honor. It's so unprecedented, even for him. I didn't think he would ever be better than he was when he won, when he was unanimous MVP in 2016. And the extended stretch that we've seen now is better than that. And it's with like inferior teammates around him, which only makes it more impressive. And he's older. Man, he was like leaving me speechless on Saturday night.
No, I hear you for sure. I do. That sounds to me a lot like recency bias, to be honest. But look, I'll have Dame right now, but I think there's a good chance he loses that spot, especially if Steph keeps this thing going. I would have Harden and Dame first team, Luka and Steph second team. So we just flipped. But I think that four-way race is really, really close, and it kind of just comes down to a matter of taste and, like you're saying, a matter of values. Do you care more about the statistical production or the team performance? And for me, I try to balance it both, and so I give a little bit more weight to the team production. And mostly I try to imagine what the Blazers would look like without Lillard, and I feel like that they might even be as bad or worse than the Warriors without Steph, you know. And I understand that's kind of what the RPM number tries to pull together, but I mean, if you're talking about, you know, Canner and Melo out there, you know, trying to like pick up the slack for Dame, I mean, that's just not going to work. It's going to get really, really ugly really fast. And they've had so many injuries that, you know, I think that there's actually been better lineup stability in Golden State than in Portland. And that's another thing that I would probably put in Dame's favor as well. All right. On this kind of a competition of, you know, where are we stacking up, you know, these different star level players, we got an awesome question that came in from Cantor in Amsterdam. And I just want to hop right to it. And he writes, if you could clone players, what would the ideal starting five look like, and what star talent could still only be used sparingly? For example, five LeBrons would be pretty unbeatable, or five KDs, but five Stephs would be too small and weak defensively, even though they'd shoot the ball so well. Five Giannises wouldn't have enough outside shooting, and five Jokic's would be too slow. And then there are the spacing issues, clones who might get in their own way, like Giannis, Zion, etc. So would you go for two-way players like Drew Holiday, Jaylen Brown, Chris Middleton, or would you still need some glue guys? And now he's saying, in my Clone Wars plan, you can clone as many of these players as you want to your liking. So, for example, you could clone Steph twice and then fill out a rotation around him with Tatum, Giannis, and Jokic. Or you could take two Hardens and two Clays plus a Gobert. You can kind of mix and match these clones however you want, Michael. Now, I've heard this conversation before, but not quite with such specificity. The last time I had this conversation, I concluded that I think five KDs would beat five of anybody else. Would you agree with that or no?
I think I will disagree with that, but five KDs is one of the three best teams I think I could create.
So my argument for the five KDs basically boiled down to he's very complete. He's a good enough passer. He's an incredible scorer. He's got the length defensively. If you had to get doubled by two KDs or three KDs on the block, you're probably able to handle any big guy down there. And there's enough perimeter versatility where you could kind of follow the guards around on the perimeter as well. So if you could only have one player cloned five times, I feel like he's got the best argument. With LeBron, I just worry so much of his value is on the ball. Where are you just kind of wasting some of LeBron's offensive abilities when he's standing and watching the other LeBrons play? And defensively, you know, I would still probably take KD over LeBron in this kind of a clone scenario. I mean, Anthony Davis is another intriguing pick, but I just think the ball handling and passing stuff probably holds him back. And, you know, Kawhi would probably be in the mix, but I don't think he's got quite enough length to deal with the interior defense. Anybody else you want to throw into the mix when we're talking about just a pure five-man cloning conversation?
So, I mean, you've named basically all the guys who are at the top of the list for me, and what you said was really interesting about LeBron, just because I agree that he's so great on ball, but picturing five LeBrons, like LeBron's greatest skill is his brain. So just like thinking about how one of them is going to like cut baseline while two others set like a flare screen for the fifth guy. And meanwhile, the LeBron who has the ball is like posted up on the block and like seeing everything. I think that five LeBrons is still absolutely unimpeachably the best and can't be beat.
But even against five KDs, really.
Your argument for KD is interesting just because I'm picturing a floor where he's got like his arms spread, like all the KDs are just their arms are extended as long as they can be, just showing off the wingspan factor. That is pretty difficult. I
mean,
think.
Michael, imagine a KD pick and roll with two KDs in the corners.
yeah, that's tough to guard. I would say if that team was going up against the five LeBron team, like, could KD single coverage one LeBron posting up, and then what breakdowns does that have defense? Like, I don't know. I think I would put my money on LeBron, but it would be close.
It's really close. I mean, I think you dare LeBron to shoot threes, and you know LeBron wouldn't be able to dare KD to shoot threes, right? So that would be one possible advantage. It would be incredible. I would love to see this played out in NBA 2K. If we have any 2K people who know how to do this kind of thing, please make the simulation five KDs versus five LeBrons and tell us what the results are.
Yeah, or any scientists who are listening, if you want to actually clone real people, that would be cooler. I'd love to see that.
No, Michael, we're in a pandemic. The scientists have their hands full. Let's let them focus on the important stuff. So let's take up his question, though, because it's a little bit more nuanced in basketball and nitty-gritty and X's and O's than just the classic five-player clone. So if you could have any combination of clones within a five-man lineup, how would you do this? What's your strategy? And, you know, give me your best team right now.
Well, strategically, it didn't really take a lot of thought for me. Like, the team that I put together that is, I think, just, man, like, unbeatable, but I have a little bit of bias in here, and you're going to totally debunk what I'm about to say about it.
I feel like it's last year's Celtics starting lineup?
So close to the championship. it's not, although it has one player from that team. So I'll just read it to you. I have three Kawhi Leonards.
Wow.
Everyone who listens to this podcast knows I love Kawhi, and
think Kawhi will talk to Kawhi when he has to watch him just pound the dribble for 15 seconds for the mid-range turnaround? You know, is there going to be any tension there? You know, will they look
at each other
in the lineup?
There is. There 100% is. They're going to talk true to each other. There's going to be great communication because they all understand what it's like to be Kawhi. They get the Kawhi persona. It'll basically be telepathic communication, I would assume.
I would hate to dribble the ball up the court against a double team trap from Kawhi's, like two Kawhi's. That would be really difficult.
No, you're absolutely right with the their ability to trap, and then you can also switch in multiple situations. But offensively, like, you know, I dabbled with just having five Kawhis because I think five Kawhis is, man, try saying that five times fast. I think it's better than five KDs by a hair. I just think that Kawhi is such a complete basketball player. I just don't know. Maybe, like, the playmaking is a little bit of an issue there, and he has complained recently this season about the need for a true point guard on his team, someone who can handle ball handling responsibilities a little bit more because he doesn't want to. So that would be a little tricky, I think. But just like his ability to score at all three levels, he's attacking the basket more. He's one of the best rebounders at his size. He's got the length. I don't really see any other weaknesses there, and I think it would be just really tough to score on that team for obvious reasons. But that's not the final team that I have. Only three Kawhis, and then I have one Anthony Davis.
Okay.
Because Anthony Davis is, you know, he's Anthony Davis. Like, it's just, like, if we need the rim protection, if we need a little bit more length, We need run a pick and roll with someone who's not Kawhi. Then let's get the best, most acrobatic pick and roll partner there. That would be great. And then my fifth player, I was thinking of trying to get someone who's really elite on the defensive end who can also handle the ball and appease the Kawhi need for that point guard. And I came up with Marcus Smart. And
oh, Michael.
Marcus Smart, three Kawhi Leonards, and AD, no one is beating that team. I'm sorry. It's unbeatable. You're not doing it.
My team is about to destroy your team. It's not even going to be close. Are you ready for this?
Are you going to cheat? Well, you're probably going to cheat and have all of players who are headed to the Hall of Fame. And I just want all of our listeners to know that I picked Marcus Smart, so give me credit there, please.
I'm following the rules as laid out by our listener, Cantor in Amsterdam. I'm breaking none of them. There's no cheating involved. I resent that implication. I also have Anthony Davis. I think the versatility aspect and two-way play of this exercise is the most important. So to answer Cantor's question, I think that's where you start. I think Anthony Davis can guard more types of opposing players than any other player in the league, while also not sacrificing really anything from a spacing standpoint on offense. And he's an awesome scoring threat. You can never leave. And he can finish in pick-and-roll situations super high level. So I want Anthony Davis as my back line. There's no doubt in my mind that LeBron's a better offense initiator than Kawhi Leonard, and it's not close, and he's thinking at a higher level. I wouldn't want two LeBrons because I don't want to have to, you know, have one of those guys stuck off the ball. So I'm taking one LeBron and one Anthony Davis. Now, because you've just handicapped your own team by adding a player like Marcus Smart, I'm bringing in Steph Curry for maximum spacing. Now, his life is not going to be as fun as it is right now in Golden State because I'm keeping him off the ball, but I'm letting him just wreak havoc with your team, and you're going to have to chase him, and Kawhi is going to have to get tired, his knee's going to get sore, you know, following Steph Curry around the court. I'm completing my five-man rotation with two Kevin Durants, okay? So I've got length and versatility across the front line. I can guard everybody, right? I've got the best lead playmaker in the game. I've got by far the best shooter of all time. And KD, it's going to be great because he doesn't need to dominate the ball. He's great off the ball. So LeBron can just run dream team stuff with KD and Steph off the ball all day long. And if they get bored of that, it's pick and roll with Anthony Davis. And good luck trying to handle that with, you know, KD spotting up on the weak side. It's over for you. Defensively, our only weak link, I think, would be Curry, but he's an underrated defender. He's fine. Everybody else is championship level on the defensive end and super versatile, can handle multiple positions. We've got size and length advantages against Kawhi. He's going to look tiny out there compared to my front line. Good luck, Michael.
When you were growing up playing video games with friends, would you just like put in cheat codes before they got to your house
and then laugh
in their face when you'd beat them? Or like, did you take pleasure in those experiences?
You're trying to say I'm playing this one on easy level? I just answered his question. So you said you had three different teams. You've told us one was five Kawhis, one was this one. What was your third team?
Five Davis Bertans.
Oh,
obviously.
The zero trick pony himself. Did you have another team?
I, in all honesty, those are the ones that I was leaning on. I was trying to get really creative with it. And to be honest, when I go to, like, obviously, like, this exercise has been, you know, on my mind before I read this email, just in life. And my go-to team.
Cloning has been on your mind?
Yes, exactly. My number one clone team of all time that I think would be potentially even better. I don't know if it would be better than five LeBrons, but five Scottie Pippins has always been like, I just give me that team. And unfortunately he does not qualify for this list, this exercise, but that would be great. And I just got to say, Steph on your team, like, no, I'm sorry, but Marcus Smart's putting him in the basket on post-ups just like he did on Saturday night. And we're not really that worried about it.
Our front line has like 72 feet of wingspan on the help defense, okay? Marcus Smart's never getting the ball if your team knows what it's doing.
I have Anthony Davis on my team, too. They're neutralizing each other.
Was there anybody who was a really tough cut for you? I think some of the toughest cuts for me were like Jokic. I consider just bringing him in, and then like now I'm getting the mutual benefit of both LeBron and Jokic as playmakers. Does that just make it completely unstoppable? I thought about him. Guys like Harden and Luka, I thought were a little bit tougher to fit here, in part because, you know, their defensive reputation, but also because maybe they weren't quite as multi-positional, or, you know, needing the ball overlapped a little bit with LeBron. Any other like structural questions like that that came to your mind when you were trying to construct these rosters? Because it was a fascinating question from him. You know, he was mentioning some of the two-way guys like Jrue Holiday or Jaylen Brown, Chris Middleton. I think what I took away from this exercise is like the very, very, very best players, especially wings, are all two-way guys, right? So you don't need to like find that role player, because LeBron, KD, Kawhi, you know, you could even throw Paul George into that mix. I mean, all those guys can do it both ways, right?
Yeah, I was about to bring up Paul George. He definitely qualifies. I mean, when I was looking at this, it was, I need size, I need wingspan, I need defensive intelligence, and I need shooting. I need all of this in one player is kind of what I was thinking. So like a two-way impact piece. And, you know, I thought about Tatum, of course. I thought about Jaylen. I don't think either of them is there for this type of discussion, to be honest with you, just because like five Tatums, you know, come on. Like I was just imagining like the 18-foot turnarounds and the 12-foot fadeaways and like four other Tatums looking I haven't got the ball.
Yeah, five Tatums is going to get you about 8 assists per game.
Yeah, so that would not work for me. I thought long and hard about Zion, just being like, if I had five Zions, then, or like three multiple Zions, like I'm just bullying the offensive glass. I'm going to give up a bajillion points and I don't really care because no one can stop me. Wait,
do you remember that ice hockey game for Nintendo where you could select between three players, a skinny guy, a medium sized guy, and a fat guy, and you could have as many combinations of those guys as you wanted? And so you could just roll out the super slow, ultra fat guy and just absolutely pulverize, like have every one of your players like that, and then just pulverize the competition. But you have to kind of play in slow mo. You have a lot of turnovers because they'd always be getting the puck stolen. That would be the five Zion experience.
You think the Zion experience would be slow? Like I could see it being, I mean, we got Zion playing point guard out here. Like I could see it being very up and down. I think in the half court, it would be maybe a little gross because, like, Zion trying to get around Zion in the paint would be really difficult. But, and I don't know where the other Zions would be placed on the court because he doesn't shoot, which was another reason why I didn't have Bam Adebayo.
I actually think five Currys could beat five Zions solely off that.
So that's a question right there. I love that. First of all, five Currys, that's kind of the best offense possible, maybe. Like if one Curry just was committed to setting really great ball screens, then we would have something on our hands. But this whole thing is just absolutely breaking my brain. It's making my face melt.
The thing I was going to bring up with Zion is if you did the clone pick and roll duo, right? So let's just like simplify it. You're only going to take the same player but clone him. And so it's like a Zion pick and roll, or a KD pick and roll, or a Harden pick and roll. And you could even throw in like pick and pops here as well, right? Zion pick and rolls would be really hard to stop, right? Because usually it's taking your best defensive player to stick with Zion as the ball handler to prevent him from dunking on you or getting the layup going to the glass or whatever. But if you had another just monster barreling down the paint, able to kind of capitalize on whoever the weak side is, or you could force switches onto small guards, and then the second Zion is just like, you know, sealing him off in the paint, that's pretty tough to stop. If you had two Zions and three shooters, you might be in the mix for like some pretty insane, like ultra high efficiency offenses. Like maybe if it's two Zions and Anthony Davis and two Currys, like if you did something like that, you might be onto it. That could be a pretty high ceiling team.
They should start. Some teams got to pay you big money for coming up with ideas like that. That is, No one's ever thought of that before. I think that that would really go a long way in the winning category. But I, you know, picturing Zion, one Zion with the ball driving to the rim, one Zion rolling, one Zion cutting baseline, one Zion screening for said other Zion cutting baseline, and then the other Zion, like, cherry-picking at midcourt or something. I think that's just a lot of fun, yeah.
I hear you. That would be a wild, wild visual experience. I think it's also newsworthy or noteworthy that we didn't really bring up Giannis a lot in this conversation. What do you attribute that to? Is it just the spacing stuff? Because he's very versatile defensively. I think if you could surround him with four shooters, you could probably get him into some awesome teams. If you had Giannis and Anthony Davis as your two defensive bigs, you're probably getting to some pretty interesting stuff. I mean, you could go LeBron, two KDs, Giannis, and AD. That's a pretty monster team as well. So maybe we gave him a little bit of short shrift, but I do think in this exercise, the shooting part, you know, pretty much took precedent, didn't it?
If you can't, I mean, yeah, if you can't shoot, you're in trouble. So five Giannises would be like, look, I think that that team makes the playoffs, probably.
Yeah.
But no, like, yeah, I'm
pretty sure they're going to beat your Bulls in the standings.
Probably. But like, I do have a little bit of concern on like how defenses would guard that. Like, you could just really pack the paint, and I don't know where the driving lanes are. I don't know how upset certain Giannises would get at the Giannis who like walked into the wide open straightaway three that didn't even touch the rim. Like, that would, it could get ugly very quick.
Yeah, they would have to change the green light on his 3-point shot in this configuration. There's no question about it. I want to hear the open floor globe suggestions for these lineups. I know your guys' wheels are turning, so let us know. openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. Design your team to beat Michael's semi-super team and to beat my super team. I'd love to hear your groups. All right, Michael, you mentioned you thought five Giannises could make the playoffs. Let's discuss the teams that are making the playoffs or are on track to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference right now, because we've played matchmaker quite a bit in the West in terms of, you know, which teams want to play which other teams, especially with the news about Jamal Murray's injury and the Lakers sliding a little bit. And we've kind of gone through some of the play-in machinations over there. In the Eastern Conference, it's getting pretty interesting because you do have Philadelphia, you know, on the record saying, look, we're gunning for that one seed. We want that one seed. And with that comes a major advantage of avoiding Brooklyn or Milwaukee until the conference finals. Brooklyn has just been cycling its rotations, and Katie just got injured again, so I imagine they're not going to be gunning for it. Milwaukee, I'm just not quite sure if they're good enough to get there, at least with their current group. And they tend to take the rest stuff pretty seriously, you know, down the stretch as well. So, you know, they may not be in that mix. That sets up the rest of the standings as this giant jumble, basically from 4 to about 12 right now, because you've got Toronto, Chicago, Washington, all kind of creeping into the mix there, trying to compete for the play-in round. And so I wanted to start with the favorites. You know, if you're Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Boston, and you're looking down the bracket, are there teams that you definitely want to play over others? Like, who's the weakest, you know, competition in this mix? Who are you circling and saying, oh, you know, if we could manipulate the matchup, we'd love to get them. Is there a team in that mix for you?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for including Boston in this conversation. That was very big of you. So appreciate that.
No, I did it begrudgingly, but look, they earned it, okay? They deserve some real credit. They're playing a lot better these last couple of weeks. It starts with Tatum. He finally listened to my motivational speeches on these podcasts. He's been stepping up, and I absolutely love to see it. And, you know, this is what we wanted to see, and it's finally happening. The bar's pretty low there. I mean, they still haven't passed the Atlanta Hawks as of today, so let's not have a celebration lap quite yet, Michael. But I do think when you're saying, okay, which of these teams should be viewed as favorites, you know, Atlanta's new to the party, so I'm going to give Boston that credit there.
Thank you. So the question is, which teams are the top of the Eastern Conference, kind of looking down and being like, I want to play those teams? And frankly, like, it's kind of tough to – I mean, there's a lot of – bad teams, right? Or like not great teams. Like I think the Bulls, if they were to make it, I don't think that any teams at the top would sweat them necessarily, even though you've got two all-stars on that team, you've got veterans on that team. I just, the inconsistency and the lack of experience in the playoffs, I don't think that that would be very competitive, to be honest, this year.
This two all-stars thing with the Bulls, it reminds me of when Minnesota traded for two number one picks, you know, Wiggins and Anthony Bennett. I mean, come on, you know, it's like technically true, but come on.
It's like the old Washington Wizards big three with Anton Jameson and who was, I don't even remember who else. It was like Caron Butler and Gilbert Arenas, and it was just like, come on, guys, what are we doing?
I thought you were going towards John Wall, Bradley Beal, and Otto Porter. Another not quite so big
exactly.
three.
Exactly, yeah, that's very true. But like in a playoff setting, I don't know. Like I don't mean to get people all riled up, but the Knicks just don't scare me.
Ooh,
at all.
Wow.
No, and I have respect for them. I have respect for their coaching. I have respect for just their buy-in and how they've embraced the defensive end. And I'll tell you real quick, before the season began, I was freelancing for 538, and I had a pitch about how RJ Barrett's closeouts were the worst like in the NBA by far statistically. And there was a lot of data to support it. He was horrendous. And I was going to write that story to kind of preview how his work on the defensive end was such a critical variable for his own trajectory going forward. And I'm really glad that I never wrote that piece, because he's just been a completely different player on the defensive end and on closeouts this season. And his rotations are so crisp. He just looks like a completely different basketball player in that regard as a help defender. It's amazing. And I know that's just like one small part of their team, but it's just, it kind of speaks to their like total defensive commitment under Tibbs.
No, I mean, it's been crazy. Absolutely night and day. I mean, I don't understand how he coached them up so quickly in so many different areas. It's pretty mind-blowing. You know, Randall is probably not even like, you know, deserving of all that much credit on his defensive improvement, but he's improved so much offensively, he's probably going to win most improved player. And I really didn't see it coming. So I am shocked that you're saying they're the weakest link. I mean, I think if I'm one of the top three teams, I'm not afraid of them. But at the same time, you know, I think that any of the teams in that play-in mix right now are probably looking weaker than the Knicks, with the possible exception of Miami, right? Like, to me, Charlotte, Indiana, Toronto, Chicago, Washington, all those teams are dead in the water before the Knicks.
No, I mean, you're right, and I'm going to get absolutely destroyed in my mentions for bringing up the Knicks first, even though I do not think that they are worse than a bunch of the teams that you just mentioned.
Okay, so your argument is basically like paper tigers, right? Like, they're having a good story or in the regular season, but they're not going to be able to elevate to the next level in the playoffs.
Right. What's their next gear? Like, what's their next gear is like my whole thing with that team.
Well, so let me ask you this. If it's Atlanta, New York somehow in the 4 or 5, and I'm just throwing this out there, you know, because it's so tight. If Boston, you know, guy tweaks an ankle, whatever, Celtics slip a little bit. Who would you pick, Atlanta versus New York?
I would pick Atlanta, honestly. I'm infatuated with Atlanta. I love their roster. I love... You know, they just got John Collins back yesterday in like a pretty impressive win over the Pacers. And the Pacers are another team that I think I was just wrong about them. Like, I wrote this little thing right around the time that Caris LeVert made his debut. And Caris looks okay, I guess. But, like, there's just something wrong with that team. I can't really put my finger on it. They're not – I would not be that petrified of them if I were one of the top three or four teams in the East. But getting back to it, like, you know, Atlanta, they bring back John Collins. They haven't really been able, like, if they are healthy and Bogdan's playing as well as he's played this month, and you have Trae Young, if Dre Hunter is back, Clint Capella's been an absolute monster. Like, those five guys that I just named have basically not played at all together this season, which kind of speaks to, you know, I was just talking about that, what's that next gear? Like, the Hawks have that gear. That lineup is another gear, potentially. That's an incredible five-man unit. And then you just have a lot of depth, and you have a lot of shooting, you have a lot of skill. I really like the Atlanta Hawks, and they've played great basketball under Nate McMillan. So I would take the Hawks, I think, over the Knicks.
I mean, it's a fascinating clash of styles, right? Because New York's offense, a lot of times, if Randle just doesn't really have it going and kind of grind down, and you wonder how many different people can they really go to in a postseason series. I'm not sure, you know, good defenses, if the Knicks were to draw Milwaukee or Philly, I don't think Randle is really scaring them that much, right? But with Atlanta, it's like, you know, they're going to want to play this fun, you know, high-powered scoring style. Who's going to win that matchup style? Can New York just choke them with their defense? And then does Atlanta, you know, the inexperience factor start to come up and bite the Hawks a little bit? I'd probably lean Atlanta too, because I think they just have more total quality players, and they've been in a really nice groove here for the last, you know, month or so. But, you know, I wouldn't guarantee it. That would be a fun series if we get it, but we're probably not going to get it because I think Boston's going to get that fourth seed. So of the really like weak teams here that I was describing, like if you're Philly and you're sitting at the number one seed, who do you circle and think, oh, I would love for them to come out of the play-in round, whether it's Charlotte, Indiana, Toronto, Chicago, Washington? I mean, I feel like Indiana, if they had everybody healthy simultaneously, is at least, you know, probably the most competitive from that group. You know, they have a number of like all-star or fringy type players where I just wouldn't want to necessarily deal with them. I feel like Toronto's chemistry and stuff has been so rough this year that they're probably going to be a Cancun team. If they make it in, they're going to want to get out as quickly as possible. I mean, Washington might be a little bit more threatening. I mean, as crazy as it is to say that, just because the star guards have been playing better and there's like kind of a chaos, you know, factor to it where like, if somebody, you know, Beal just goes absolutely nuts, they can make your life a little bit more interesting. I think I would probably want Charlotte, you know, or Chicago more than some of those other teams. But Toronto might be the team that I would circle and say, like, that's my dream, you know, just because they're so dysfunctional, even if they're coming off of, you know, last year with the playoff experience, needing to, you know, figure out Lowry. I mean, that's a challenge, but just sort of banking on them imploding.
So Toronto is interesting for that specific matchup with the Sixers because Joel Embiid said in a recent podcast, he was talking about, you know, the experience of getting double teamed, and he specifically cited Toronto and how they are so aggressive with him and how he can't really do anything on the catch. Like they just send bodies at him, and it's not like he won't be able to figure that out in a seven-game series or anything like that. But it is an intriguing X factor for me, just how they play, assuming everyone is healthy.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. The junk defense stuff would be really annoying. Yeah. In like, it just makes you think and it makes you work harder. Maybe you just want to dunk on Biombo. You know? Like if you're Joel Embiid. Who do you think is going to actually get the final 10 seed when you're looking at Toronto, Chicago, Washington? Why do I feel like it's going to be Washington?
No, it's so great that you said that because I don't think this is possible, but it's it is possible. I don't think it's likely. What I want to see happen more than anything is I want the Nets to get the number one seed, and then I want the Wizards to get the 8 because I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you did because you're a hawk on social media, but Kevin Durant listed his 5 best teammates he's ever played with, and he did not have Russell Westbrook on that list at first. Like, he just completely blanked on him. And something tells me that between now and that potential matchup that Russell Westbrook will be educated on that clip's existence. He will watch it. He will study it before he goes to bed. It's the first thing he'll watch when he wakes up in the morning. And like the Wizards have played the Nets pretty tough. I don't think that they would necessarily be scared of – I don't think they would win. But I don't think that they would be scared of the Nets in a way that some other teams might be. And I just would love to see Westbrook just completely unleashed, playing like 44 minutes a game, going at like hunting Kevin Durant on every possession. I think that would be just terrific.
Yeah, I mean, it would also probably be self-defeating for Washington. You know, this could be like the best possible scenario for the Nets in that matchup is to just like, you know, snub Westbrook in a way where he just takes control of everything and it just blows up in his face. That seems like a pretty strong strategy, kind of what the Lakers did by not guarding him for half of their playoff series and watching him just make turnover after turnover to overcompensate and miss threes. That would be a phenomenal first round matchup. I'm glad that you mentioned it. I'm completely sold based on what you said there. Brooklyn versus Washington is kind of a dream. It would be so much better than Brooklyn, Chicago, or Brooklyn, Indiana. I mean, those are kind of forgettable, you know, in my opinion. So I love that one. Who don't you want to face if you're one of these top teams right now? Like, what's kind of the landmine scenario, right? I mean, if you're Milwaukee, would you be, you know, worried that Boston drops to six and you catch them in a 3-6? Like, who's the team that you're kind of eyeing nervously?
Well, I think if the Celtics, I don't think they'll drop to six, so I don't think that the Bucks or whoever would have to worry about them. But if I'm one of the top three seeds, the team that I'm just petrified over is the Miami Heat, and it's not even really close. I think the Miami Heat are, like, it's really foolish to say that they are a contender, but when I look at that team and I see people kind of overlooking them, I'm just like, are you overlooking Bam Adebayo? Because Bam Adebayo is a legitimate star. He showed that the other day when he hit the buzzer beater against the Nets. He's having one of the most overlooked seasons in the league. Did not make the All-Star team, but he's just an absolute, like, I don't have enough good things to say about him. And Jimmy Butler basically just, like, isn't, you know, understandably, like, locked into this season in a way that I think he normally would be for a variety of reasons. We know what Jimmy Butler can do in the playoffs. When he has played in this regular season, this has been the best season of his career. So I'm going up against two legitimate stars. Like, this isn't the Bulls with LaVine and Vooch. Like, these two guys carried the Miami Heat to the NBA Finals last year, a six-game affair against the Lakers. Like, they are very legitimate. And, I couldn't even imagine. I have a lot of reasons why. Like, they have the three-point shooting. They have... you talked about the junk defenses. Like, nobody really plays defense like Miami. Like, they zone a ton, which also the Hornets do, but they'll also switch a ton of ball screens with their five with Bam, and they don't really even need to help off three-point shooters behind him because he's got this like crazy closeout speed and foot quickness to stay with legitimate point guards out on the perimeter. So, like, I just wouldn't want any part of that. I just think that, and you're in a series with Eric Spoelstra to boot. Like, the Heat, like, I could definitely see the Heat beating the Sixers. I could see the Heat beating the Bucks. I could see the Heat. I don't know if I can see the Heat beating the Nets. Maybe. I'm just really high on the Miami Heat.
No, I think you're absolutely right. That's the team that a lot of the favorites are going to be fearing, and it's crazy because imagine being the one seed in either conference. Like, in the Western Conference, your reward could be a first round series with Steph Curry. In the Eastern Conference, your reward for winning the one seed could be a first round series with the Miami Heat. I mean, they've been so up and down here. They haven't been able to get that same level of late season push that we're seeing from both Boston and New York. And so, you know, maybe they're just thinking, well, hey, look, you know, this has been a crazy year and a half. We don't necessarily need to gun down the stretch for seeding. Whoever we draw, we draw. And, you know, we're feeling good that we can challenge basically anybody we get. I mean, Milwaukee as well. I mean, that's kind of a nightmare scenario for them. Like, they would much rather have teams like New York or Charlotte or Atlanta, you know, compared to Miami, right? And so I do wonder, do you think we're going to see any seedings, like, kind of jockeying when we get to the very end of teams maybe trying to avoid Miami? I'm not sure it's going to, you know, be possible for those top teams. Or, you know, for Miami, do you think that they're going to try to make a push to get to six to avoid the play-in? Because, you know, even though we're hyping them up here a little bit, they have not been very consistent and their offense has not been that good. You get them into a play-in scenario where the offense goes flat. I mean, that's pretty dicey as well. Like, where do you think they're going to finish in the seeding order by the end of the season?
I mean, right now, I think they're in seventh behind the Knicks, Celtics, and Hawks. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like Boston has turned a corner. I feel like the Knicks are really solid just because they bring it on defense, and their defense carries even against some of the better teams. And I just like the Hawks. I don't think the Hawks are going to drop too far based on once they get a little bit healthier, they'll only be better. But, like, I'm just not that concerned about Miami's offense because, like, you just look at the names out there who are actually taking the shots, and once ever. Like, their offense has been bad, sure. But usually, like, if you were to really break it down, like, how is their offense when Dragic, Jimmy, and Bam are on the floor together, and Duncan Robinson? Like, those lineups just haven't been able to play. So assuming that they're healthy, assuming that Tyler Hero does not shoot, you know, below 32% from the three-point line when he's getting those open shots, like, I don't know. I just don't have a lot of great concern with the Miami Heat. And we haven't even said Victor Oladipo's name, in part because he hasn't been able to stay healthy. But if he's able to give them anything, like, that's a variable no other team really has in this category. So I really like Miami, man.
No, I do too. And I think you're right. I mean, I think that Philly, I mean, they're not loving that matchup because it's a team that has, you know, big, physical, versatile defenders that can kind of match up with their players at key positions. You know, I think of anybody who Embiid could go against in the Eastern Conference, Bam is probably the guy you would want to have, right, of basically any possible matchup. And so Philly would love to avoid that. I think Brooklyn would too, just because that could set up a scenario where they have to go through Miami, Milwaukee, and Philly to get to the finals. Like, that sounds about as hard as it could get for Brooklyn. Like, isn't that their worst case scenario? You know, from a matchup standpoint and a star power standpoint, like, I think the Nets should be viewed as the favorites in the East still, but if they have to go through that, that's a real legitimate gauntlet, especially if you compared it, like, if they were the one seed and they're getting, like, I don't know, Washington, and then, you know, like, Atlanta or Boston, and then the winner of Philly, Milwaukee. I mean, that's a real shift in difficulty level, right? I think that's something that we should be watching here down the stretch, how these seeding races can impact the potential playoff paths for the favorite, because there's a wide variety in terms of degree of difficulty facing these teams. And, you know, even though I don't necessarily foresee a lot of upsets, like, in the first round of the Eastern Conference, like, I think I'm probably going to wind up predicting mostly chalk. There's going to be an accumulation effect, I think, on some of these teams, whoever does draw those landmine teams that we're talking about. So, you know, I think it's easy to snicker and write off that Eastern Conference play-in group because the records really are not that impressive. I mean, there's a possibility that, you know, three of those four teams are under 500 by the time they get in there. But exactly how it shakes is going to have major implications as we go forward into the postseason. All right, Michael, I want to hear from the Open Floor Globe on that issue as well. Who's the team everyone should circle? Was Michael way too rude about the New York Knicks? Who's the team that everyone is trying to dodge and duck in the Eastern Conference? If you're a fan of one of those top favorites, who do you want to see and who do you not want to see? Let us know. All right, they can email us, openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. Michael is on Instagram and Twitter, at Michael V as in Victor Pina. I'm on Instagram at Ben.Golliver, on Twitter at Ben Golliver. Be sure to find our page on Apple Podcasts by searching for Open Floor. That's two words. When you get there, scroll down. It will say rate and review. Tap 5 stars. It's just that easy to help us spread the word. Michael will be back later this week, like usual, to dig into all sorts of questions. So keep those coming. Until then, Michael, I will talk to you.
Talk soon, man.